Haribo. Jai Om Vishnu Pad. Paramahansa Paravidakacharya. Also tell us that she, Shimad, his divine grace by a Chalanad of Vatavananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Gijai, Iskan founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Gijai, Anantako Evyoishnav Vrindi Gijai, Namacharya Srila Hoyadas Thakur Gijai, Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Parabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Garadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopanath Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Majuram Gijai Jagannatha Swami Gijai Yamunamani Gijai Srimati Lasi Devi Gijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Navani, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharne, Nivashesha, Shunyavadi Paschacha, Deja Tarani. So, let me read the translation. Gurudev, give this servant just one drop of mercy. I am lower than the blade of grass. Give me all help. Give me strength. Let me be as you are without desires or aspirations. Gurudev, I offer you all respects, for thus I may have the energy to know you correctly. Then by chanting the holy name in great ecstasy, all my offenses will cease. Gurudev, when will such mercy fall to this one who is weak and devoid of intelligence? Allow me to be with you. Gurudev, if you examine me, you will find no good qualities. Your mercy is all that I am made of. If you are not merciful unto me, I can only weep, and I will not be able to maintain my life. And that's a wonderful song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. So, without further ado, we are going to continue with our reading of Prabhupada's Krishna book, and we're on chapter 14. Just finishing up Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna after Lord Brahma realized he had made a big mistake by stealing the cows, or the calves, and the coward boys. And then Krishna manifested those very same calves and coward boys in Vishnu form, and Lord Brahma understood that he didn't understand. Okay, so let's continue. So Om Gana Timadandasha Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So now we are going to share the screen so you can read along with us. Let me find the text. I have a lot of open windows here. It's here somewhere. There it is. All right. Here it is. We're continuing just in the middle of the chapter. I almost said purport. But anyway, we're in the middle of the chapter, chapter 14 of Krishna book. This is one of the longer chapters. Actually, the longest chapter in Krishna book is entitled Prayers to the Personified Vedas. And that's quite large, but it's a very philosophical chapter. But that's towards the end of Krishna book. So, Lord Brahma continued, My Lord, sometimes I am puzzled as to how your lordship will be able to repay in gratitude the devotional service of all these residents in Vrindavan. And of course, as Krishna says, I cannot repay your devotion itself will have to be your payment. He says that to the gopis specifically. Although I know that you are the supreme source of all benediction, I'm puzzled to know how you will be able to repay all the service that you're receiving from these residents of Vrindavan. I think of how you are so kind, so magnanimous, that even Putana, who came to cheat you by dressing herself as a very affectionate mother, was awarded liberation in the actual post of a mother. And other demons belonging to the same family. such as a goss or a cos, or a, were also favored with liberation and achieved. You, under the circumstances, I am puzzled. These residents of Vrindavan have given you everything, their bodies, their minds, their love, their homes, their possessions. Everything is being utilized for your purpose. So how will you be able to repay your debt to them? You have already given yourself to Putana. I surmise that you shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being unable to repay their loving service. My lord, I can understand that the super excellent quality of the service rendered by the residents of Vrindavan is due to their spontaneously engaging all natural instincts in your loving service. It is said that attachment for material objects and home is due to illusion, which makes a living entity conditioned in the material world. But this is only the case for persons who are not Krishna conscious. In the case of the residents of Vrindavan, such obstructions as attachment to hearth and home are non-existent, because their attachment has been directed unto you and their homes have been converted into temples by your constant presence there. And because they have forgotten everything for your sake, there is no impediment. For a Krishna conscious person, there is no such thing as impediments due to attachment for hearth and home, nor is there illusion. Because why? Because they understand, even apart from the residents of Vrindavan, they understand that manasa deha geha yoki shimura apilam tuyananda kishore. Apilam tuyapade nanda kishore. Everything is yours, Krishna. If you understand that, then you can have so much opulence, but you're not claiming proprietorship. You understand that Krishna's the proprietor. I can understand that your appearance as a small coward boy, a child of the coward man, is not at all a material activity. You are so obliged by their affection that you are here to inspire them with more loving service by your transcendental presence. In Vrindavan, there is no distinction between material and spiritual, because everything is dedicated to your loving service. My dear Lord, your Vrindavan pastimes are simply to inspire your devotees. If someone takes your Vrindavan pastimes to be material, he will be misled. My dear Lord Krishna, those who deride you, claiming that you have a material body like an ordinary man, are described in Bhagavad Gita as demoniac and less intelligent. Avijananti mam buddha. In other words, Krishna calls them an ass. You are always transcendental. The non-devotees are cheated because they consider you to be a material creation. Actually, you have assumed this body, which exactly resembles that of an ordinary coward boy, simply to increase the devotion and transcendental bliss of your devotees. So when Lord Brahma is saying you have assumed this body, it doesn't mean that Krishna took the body. It means Krishna's manifesting this particular aspect of himself. Try to understand. We assume a body in the sense that we take a body, but Krishna doesn't take a body. He doesn't give up a body like we do. My dear Lord, I have nothing to say about people who advertise that they've already realized God or that by their realization they have themselves become God. But as far as I'm concerned, I admit frankly that for me it is not possible to realize you by my body, mind, or speech. What can I say about you? Or how can I realize you by my senses? I cannot even think of you perfectly with my mind, which is the master of the senses. Your quality, your activities, and your body cannot be conceived of by any person within this material world. Only by your mercy can one understand to some extent what you are. My dear Lord, although you are the supreme Lord of all creation, I, this is Lord Brahma, sometimes falsely think that I am the master of this universe. I may be the master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes, and there are also innumerable Brahmas who preside over these universes. But actually, you are the master of them all. As the super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for committing the great offense of disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and kaivas. Now, if you kindly allow me, I will immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and kaivas without my presence. You know, Lord Brahma feels pretty embarrassed by what he did. And he said, I don't want to interfere with Krishna's enjoyment. My dear Lord Krishna, your very name suggests that you are all attractive. Of course, Krishna. So what does Krish mean? Krish means to attract or to pull. Na is short for Ananda. bliss. So Krishna attracts and pulls us by the bliss of his all-attractive features. And also na can refer to the negation of the material miseries. Apavarga, Vartmini. The attraction of the sun and the moon are all due to you. But the attraction of the sun, you are beautifying, by the attraction of the sun, you are beautifying the very existence of the Yadu dynasty. With the attraction of the moon, you're enhancing the potency of the land, the demigods, the brahmins, and the cows, and the oceans. Because of your supreme attraction, demons like Kamsa and others are annihilated. Therefore, it is my deliberate conclusion that you are the only worshipable deity within the creation. Accept my humble obeisances until the annihilation of this material world. As long as there is sunshine within this material world, kindly accept my humble obeisances. In this way, Brahma, the master of this universe, after offering humble and respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and circumambulating him three times, was ready to return to his abode known as Brahmaloka. By his gesture, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him permission to leave. As soon as Brahma left, Krishna immediately returned to the bank of Yamuna and rejoined his calves and coward boyfriends, who were situated just as they had been on the very day they had vanished. Krishna had left his friends on the bank of the Yamuna while they were engaged in lunch, and although he returned exactly 1 year later, the coward boys thought that he had returned within a second. That is the way of Krishna's different energies. That is the way Krishna's different energies act. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna himself is residing in everyone's heart and that he causes both remembrance and forgetfulness. All living entities are controlled by the supreme energy of the Lord, and sometimes they remember and sometimes they forget their constitutional position. His friends, being controlled in such a way, could not understand that for one whole year they were absent from the Yamuna's bank or under the spell of Brahma's illusion. When Krishna appeared before the boys, they thought, Krishna has returned within a minute. They began to laugh, thinking that Krishna was not willing to leave their lunchtime company. They were very jubilant and invited him, Dear friend Krishna, you've come back so quickly. All right, we have not as yet begun our lunch, not even taken one morsel of food, so please come and join us and let us eat together. Krishna smiled and accepted their invitation and began to enjoy the lunchtime company of his friends. While eating, Krishna was thinking, These boys believe that I've come back within a second, but they do not know that for the last year I've been involved with the mystic activities of Lord Brahma. And of course they have been soundly, I wouldn't say asleep, but in a state of suspended animation. Amazing pastime. After finishing their lunch, Krishna and his friends and calves began to return to their Brajabhumi homes. While passing, they enjoyed seeing the dead carcass of a gasura in the shape of a gigantic serpent. When Krishna returned home to Brajabhumi, he was seen by all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He was wearing a peacock feather in his helmet, which was also decorated with forest flowers. Krishna was also garlanded with flowers and painted with different colored minerals collected from the caves of Govardhana Hill. Govardhana Hill is always famous for supplying natural red oxides, and Krishna and his friends painted their bodies with them. Each of them had a bugle made of buffalo horn and a stick and a flute, and each called his respective calves by their particular names. Wow, what a wonderful pastime. The coward boys were so proud of Krishna's wonderful activities. While entering the village, they all sang his glories. All the gopis in Vrindavan saw beautiful Krishna entering the village. The boys composed nice songs describing how they were saved from being swallowed by the great serpent and how the serpent was killed. Some described Krishna as the son of Yashoda and others as the son of Nanda Maharaj. He is so wonderful that he saved us from the clutches of the great serpent and killed him, they said. But little did they know that 1 year had passed since the killing of Bagasura. In this regard, Maharaj Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami how the inhabitants of Vrindavan suddenly developed so much love for Krishna, although he was not a member of any of their families. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, during the absence of the original coward boys when Krishna expanded himself, why is it that the boy's parents became more loving toward him than toward their own sons? Also, why did the cows become so loving towards the calves more than toward their own calves? This is a very important question. So listen to this. Listen to the answer. Shukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Pariksit that every living entity is actually most attached to his own self. That's true. I mean, for example, that's why we like our family, our nation, of course, our body, our children, our car, which is basically us. That's false ego. I and mine. Outward paraphernalia such as home, family, friends, country, society, wealth, opulence, and reputation are all only secondary and pleasing to a living entity. In other words, these are all connected to the sense of self. The sense of self is primary. They please only because they bring pleasure to the self. For this reason, one is self-centered and is attached to his body and self more than he is to relatives like wife, children, and friends. For example, even this applies if one is a humanitarian. A humanitarian means one basically tries to help all of humanity, right? So if one's a humanitarian, you're a humanitarian because you're a human. That means you're attached to yourself. It's still extended selfishness. You know, there's a primary selfishness, is me, and there's the body, then there's the emotional self, or somewhere in that order. And then you could extend it to family, to neighbors, to village, to race, even to religion. Oh, people of the same religion. If there's some immediate danger to one's own person, he first of all takes care of himself, then others. This is natural. The next important object of affection after his own self is his material body. Yes. A person who has no information of the spirit soul is very much attached to his material body. Tell me all about it. So much so that even in old age he wants to preserve the body in so many artificial ways, thinking that his old and broken body can be saved. Ooh. So I guess that's why I'm going to the doctor and having operations. Well, I don't think it can be saved. That's true. I don't think it can be saved. But I think, maybe keep it running a little longer. I think that's all right. I'm not under illusion thinking that, I'm going to save it and keep it running forever and ever and ever and upload my brain into a computer so I'll be able to talk to you from my Lenovo laptop. I'm not thinking like that. Everyone is working hard day and night just to give pleasure to his own self under either the bodily or spiritual concept of life. We are attached to material possessions because they give pleasure to the senses of the body. Senses, of course, including the mind. Manakshakshtani, Indriyani, Prakriti, Stani, Karshati. The attachment to the body is there only because the I, the spirit soul, is within the body. Similarly, when one is further advanced, he knows that the spirit soul is pleasing because it's part and parcel of Krishna. Ultimately, it's Krishna who is pleasing and all attractive. He is the super soul of everything. And in order to give us this information, Krishna descends and tells us that the all attractive center is he himself. Without being an expansion of Krishna, nothing can be attractive. In other words, we're expansions of Krishna, we're jivatava expansions, but that's why we have some attractive features. And also, Krishna is the soul of the soul. Our soul is very important, but the soul of the soul is actually even more important. That's Krishna. Whatever is attractive within the cosmic manifestation is due to Krishna. Krishna is therefore the reservoir of all pleasure. Prabhupada actually published a little booklet called The Reservoir of Pleasure. The active principle of everything is Krishna, and highly elevated transcendentalists see everything in connection with him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that a Maha Bhagavata, or highly advanced devotee, sees Krishna as the active principle in all moving and non-moving living entities. Therefore, he sees everything within this cosmic manifestation in relation to Krishna. For the fortunate person who has taken shelter of Krishna as everything, liberation is already there. He is no longer in the material world. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Whoever is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna is already on the Brahma-Buddha platform, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-20, or spiritual platform. The very name Krishna suggests piety and liberation. That's the na, meaning a negation of the material world. Okay. Anyone who takes shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna enters the boat for crossing over the ocean of nations. For him, this vast expanse of material manifestation becomes as insignificant as the water in a calf's hoofprint. Krishna is the shelter of all great souls, and he's also the shelter of the material worlds. For one who is on the platform of Krishna consciousness, Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, is not far away. He does not live within the material world where there is danger at every step. Yes. Because he doesn't identify with the body. The body is always in a dangerous situation, precarious situation. In this way, Krishna consciousness was fully explained to Maharaj Pariksit by Shukadeva Goswami as he recited to the king the statements and prayers of Lord Brahma. These descriptions of Lord Krishna's pastimes with his coward boys, his eating with them on the bank of the Yamuna, and Lord Brahma's prayers unto him are all transcendental subject matters. Anyone who hears, recites, or chants them surely gets all his spiritual desires fulfilled. Wow. Thus Krishna's childhood pastimes in sporting with Balaram and the coward boys in Vrindavana were described. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 14th chapter of Krishna, prayers offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. Just a few comments about this whole pastime of the calves and the coward boys being stolen. So, on one hand, we see that it's a pastime involving Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma certainly learns his lesson after testing Krishna. That's on one hand. But on the other hand, there's an esoteric reason that Krishna enacted this particular pastime. And now, what is that esoteric reason? The esoteric reason, or reasons, are as follows. One is, Krishna was fulfilling the desires, and just follow me, of the other elderly gopis other than Yashodamayi and gopas to have Krishna as their son. And so they can interact with what they thought was ostensibly their son that came from them. But their son was actually Krishna, so that's why they developed more attraction for Krishna. And the cows also desire to have, they had some maternal affection there. Generally, cows are in Shantaras, but there's a mixture of some in maternal affection. So the cows got a chance to have Krishna as their calves. So their desires were fulfilled. That's interesting, isn't it? But even apart from that, we're going to get a little bit more esoteric here. Even apart from that, all the gopis wanted to marry Krishna. Now, sometimes people accuse Krishna of having affairs with other people's wives. Now, really, everyone belongs to Krishna, and your wife or whatever is not your wife. Everyone is Krishna's property. We're all prakriti in relation to Krishna, the Purusha. So you're the one in illusion thinking that someone is your wife. So that's one point. But another point is that Krishna really got married, marriage ceremony and everything like that, to all the gopis during that year. Because during that year, and this involves an aspect of the culture that was practiced at that particular juncture, and that aspect was to have children have the marriage, not that they live with each other, you know, they waited until they were like 18, 19, 20, whatever it was, but at least the formal aspect of the marriage was done at a very, very early age. Now, the reason for that was so that when people got older, they weren't thinking, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a husband by the toe. If he hollers, don't let him go. And so, when they got older, they knew who they were going to get married to. It wasn't a question. You know, that's the culture. Of course, in the West, it's hard to understand that. You know, we don't have this culture of loyalty, sticking to people, staying with husband, staying with wife. You know, we just like run around in an unfaithful way. Just like, you know, sometimes we speak to people at the university. They say, this is the boyfriend. This is my love of the week, my eternal love. Eternal love lasts for roughly a week and a half, or if they're lucky, a little bit longer than that. But, you know, people have some stability in the Vedic culture. Stability, you know, and love. Love comes about because it's centered on Krishna. It's centered on serving Krishna, one's service to Krishna. Anyway, so during that year when Krishna took the part of the cowherd boys and calves, then you had these marriages take place between the young gopis and the cowherd boys. So what does that mean exactly? That means that Krishna married all the gopis. Literally. Not just ontologically, not just spiritually, but literally, Krishna married all the gopis. So this was actually a trick whereby Krishna was able to marry all the gopis, and the other persons who married the gopis, or apparently were married to the gopis later on, because the marriage ceremony was done during that year, were not actually married to the gopis. Huh. Interesting. And of course, with Srimati Radharani, the person who married Radharani's name is Abhimanyu, never even came close to Radharani. Because Krishna is eternally Radharani's paramour. Anyway, so this is an esoteric reason, or perhaps the most important esoteric reason, or most important reason, for this particular pastime taking place. So there's many things going on. The point I'm making is there are many things going on different levels. You have Lord Brahma, you have the prayers of Lord Brahma, which really help us understand Krishna's constitutional position. You have Krishna expanding himself so we can actually see that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he's all attractive. We have the desires of the residents of Vrindavan fulfilled to have Krishna as their son or Krishna as their calf, if they happen to be cows. And ultimately, we have Krishna marrying all the gopis at that particular point. So basically, in any of these particular pastimes, you can drill down and find so many reasons, you know, exoteric and esoteric reasons for particular pastimes. I mean, like we talk about Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Lord Chaitanya appeared exoterically, you know, apparently, to start the Sankirtan movement. Kale Kale Radharma Krishna Nama Sankirtan Krishna Varanam Srisa Krishna Sango Pangas Parshanam Yagyai Hi Sankirtana Prayarya Jantihi Sumedasa. That's ostensibly. Yes, he did. However, his internal reasons were to basically enjoy, from Radharani's perspective, from his devotee's perspective, to perceive himself from Radharani's perspective, and then also to understand and experience the love, because Krishna didn't understand. It was like the question was raised the other day, you know, what about understanding Krishna? And I said, you can't understand Krishna. So even Krishna can't understand Krishna. So what to speak of us? So anyway, so he appears and he takes on the mood of Srimati Radharani. He's Gauranga. And in this way, he's able to try to understand Radharani's love for him. So anyway, so this is some of the explanations. I mean, I'm sure the Acharyas have many more explanations of these particular pastimes. Okay. So it looks like we have some time, so we can go on to chapter 15. So we finish. This is 14c, which means the third part of chapter 14, and then we're going on to 15a. The killing of Dainokasura. That's a big IS demon. In this way, Sri Krishna, along with his elder brother Balaram, passed the childhood age known as Kumara and stepped into the age of Pauganda from the 6th year up to the 10th. So imagine Krishna did all these things before he was 5, or before he was 6, actually, up to the 5th year. At that time, all the cowherd men conferred. Imagine a 5-year-old boy was being sent out to take care of the cats. At that time, all the cowherd men conferred and agreed to give the boys who had passed their fifth year the charge of the cows in the pasturing ground. In other words, six-year-old boys, I mean, they're quite mature, given charge of the cows. Krishna and Balaram traversed Vrindavan, purifying the land with their lotus footprints. Accompanied by the cowherd boys and Balaram, Krishna brought forward the cows. Of course, that was Gopastami. That was the day that Krishna got charge of the cows when he was six. How many six-year-olds can actually be that responsible? Not many. Krishna brought forward the cows and played on his flute as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, which was full of flowers, vegetation, and pasturing grass. The Vrindavan forest was sanctified as the clear mind of a devotee and was full of bees, flowers, and fruits. There were chirping birds in clear water lakes with waters that could relieve one of all fatigue. Sweet-smelling breezes blew, always refreshing the mind and body. Krishna, with his friends and Balaram, entered the forest and, seeing a favorable situation, desired to enjoy the atmosphere to the fullest extent. Krishna saw all the trees overloaded with fruits and fresh twigs, bending down to touch the ground as if welcoming him by touching his lotus feet. He was very much pleased by the behavior of the trees, fruits, and flowers, and began to smile, realizing their desires. So in other words, they are fully conscious. It wasn't just imagination, they're bending down to offer obeisances, but they were bending down. Krishna then spoke to his elder brother Balaram as follows. My dear brother, you are superior to all of us, and your lotus feet are worshipped by the demigods. Just see how these trees full with fruits and flowers have bent down to worship your lotus feet. It appears that they are trying to get out of the darkness that has obliged them to accept the form of trees. Actually, the trees born in the land of Vrindavan are not ordinary living entities. Having held the impersonal point of view in their past lives, they have been put into the stationary condition of life, but now they have the opportunity of seeing you in Vrindavan, and they are praying for further advancement in spiritual life through your personal association. Generally, living entities in the mode of darkness obtain the bodies of trees. The impersonalist philosophers are in that darkness, but they eradicate it by taking full advantage of your presence. So Prabhupada also said people walk around naked. They take birth as trees too. And we find that in the story of Manigriva Nalakuvara, which we read previously, that they took birth as trees. That was the punishment, because they were already naked, and trees are basically naked. I think that the drones that are buzzing around you must have been your devotees in the past life. Drones means like bee, type of bee. They cannot leave your company because no one can be better, more affectionate master than you. You are the supreme and original personality of Godhead, and the drones are just trying to spread your glories by chanting at every moment. I think some of them must have been great sages, devotees of your lordship, and they're disguising themselves in the form of drones because they are unable to give up your company even for a moment. My dear brother, you are the supreme worshipable Godhead. Just see how the peacocks, in other words, Krishna's praising Balaram, quite interesting. Just see how the peacocks are dancing before you in great ecstasy. The deer, whose behavior is just like that of the gopis, are welcoming you with the same affection. And the cuckoos, who are residing in this forest, are welcoming you with their joyful, sweet cries, because they consider that your appearance in their home is so auspicious. Even though they are trees and animals, these residents of Vrindavan are glorifying you. They are prepared to welcome you to the best of their ability, as is the practice of great souls in receiving another great soul at home. As for the land, it is so pious and fortunate because the footprints of your lotus feet are marking its body. It is quite natural for these Vrindavan inhabitants to thus receive a great personality like you. The herbs, creepers, and plants are also so fortunate to touch your lotus feet. And by your touching the twigs with your fingernails, these small plants are also made glorious. As for the hills and the rivers, they too are now glorious because you are glancing at them. Above all, the damsels of Braj, the gopis, are the most glorious because you embrace them with your strong arms, being attracted by their beauty. In this way, Lord Krishna and Balaram began to enjoy the residents of Vrindavan to their full satisfaction as they herded the calves and cows on the bank of the Yamuna. In some places, Krishna and Balaram were accompanied by their friends. The boys were singing imitating the humming sound of the drones and accompanying Krishna Balaram, were garlanded with forest flowers. While walking, the boys sometimes imitated the quacking sound of the swans, that's another onomatopoetic sound or word, in the lakes, or when they saw the peacocks dancing, they imitated them before Krishna. Krishna also moved his neck, imitating the dancing and making his friends laugh. The cows taken care of by Krishna had different names, and Krishna would call them with love. After hearing Krishna calling, the cows would immediately respond by mooing, and the boys would enjoy this exchange to their heart's content. They would all imitate the sound vibrations made by the different kinds of birds, especially the chakoras, peacocks, cuckoos, and butterflies. Sometimes, when they would see the weaker animals fleeing out of fear of the sounds of tigers and lions, the boys, along with Krishna and Balaram, would imitate the animals and run away with them. When they felt some fatigue, they would sit down and Balaram would put his head on the lap of one of the boys just to take rest, and Krishna would immediately come and begin massaging the legs of Balaram, because Balaram's the elder brother. And so that's the proper etiquette. Krishna observed etiquette most of the time. And sometimes Krishna would take a palm fan and fan the body of Balaram, causing a pleasing breeze to relieve him of his fatigue. Other boys would sometimes dance or sing while Balaram took rest, and sometimes they would wrestle among themselves or jump. When the boys were thus engaged, Krishna would immediately join them, and catching their hands, he would enjoy their company and laugh and praise their activities. When Krishna would feel tired and fatigued, he would sometimes take shelter at the root of a big tree or the lap of a coward boy and lie down. When he would lie down with a boy or a root as his pillow, some of the boys would come and massage his legs, some would fan his body with a fan made from leaves. Some of the more talented boys would sing in very sweet voices to please him. Thus, very soon, his fatigue would go away. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, whose legs are tended by the Goddess of Fortune, shared himself with the coward boys as one of them, expanding his internal potency to appear exactly like a village boy. But despite his appearing just like a village boy, there were occasions when he proved himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes men pose themselves as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and cheat innocent people, but they can only cheat. They cannot exhibit the potency of God. You know, you can fool some of the people some of the time, maybe all the people some of the time, you can fool all the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. While Krishna was thus engaged in his transcendental pastimes, exhibiting his internal potency in the company of the supermost fortunate coward boys, there occurred another chance for him to exhibit the superhuman powers of Godhead. His most intimate friends, Sridham, Subal, and Stoka Krishna, addressed Krishna and Balaram with great love and affection. Dear Balaram, you are very powerful. Your arms are very strong. Dear Krishna, you are very expert in killing all kinds of disturbing demons. Will you kindly note that just near this place there is a big forest of the name Talavana? This forest is full of palm trees, and all the trees are filled with fruits. Some have fallen down, and some are very ripe, even in the trees. It is a very nice place because of a great demon, Danakasura. It is very difficult to go there. No one can reach the trees to collect the fruits. Dear Krishna and Balaram, this demon is present there in the form of an ass, and he is surrounded by similar demon friends who have assumed the same shape. All of them are very strong, so it is very difficult to approach this place. Dear brothers, you are the only persons who can kill such demons. Other than you, no one can go there for fear of being killed. Not even animals go there, and no birds are living there. They've all left. One can only appreciate the sweet aroma that is coming from that place. It appears that up until now, no one has tasted the sweet fruits there, either on the tree or on the ground. Dear Krishna, to tell you frankly, we are very attracted by this sweet aroma. Dear Balaram, if you like, let us all go there and enjoy these fruits. The aroma of the fruits is now spread everywhere. Don't you smell it from here? So, of course, it's not that they were lusty after fruits. They wanted to see Krishna's pastimes. And the fruits gave them an excuse. When Balaram and Krishna were thus petitioned by their intimate friends, they were inclined to please them, and with smiling faces they proceeded toward the forest. Surrounded by all their friends, immediately upon entering the Talavan, Balaram began to yank the trees with his arms, exhibiting the strength of an elephant. Because of this jerking, all the ripe fruits fell down on the ground. Upon hearing the sound of the falling fruits, the demon Dainikasur, who was living in the form of an ass, approached with great force, shaking the whole field so that all the trees moved as if they were an earthquake. The demon appeared before Balaram and kicked his chest with his hind legs. At first, Balaram did not say anything, but with great anger, the demon kicked him again more vehemently. This time, Balaram immediately caught hold of the legs of the ass with one hand and, wheeling him around, threw him into the treetops. While he is being wheeled around by Balaram, the demon lost his life. Balaram threw the demon into the biggest palm tree about, and the demon's body was so heavy that the palm tree fell upon other trees and several fell down. It appeared as if a great hurricane was passing through the forest, and all the trees were falling down one after another. This exhibition of extraordinary strength is not at all astonishing, because Balaram is the personality of Godhead known as Ananta Shesha Naga, who is holding all the planets on the hoods of his millions of heads. He maintains the whole cosmic manifestation exactly as horizontal and vertical threads hold the weaving of a cloth. After the demon had been thrown to the trees, all the friends and associates of Dainikasura immediately assembled and attacked Balaram and Krishna with great force. They were determined to retaliate and avenge the death of their friend. But Krishna and Balaram caught each of the asses by the hind legs and exactly in the same way wheeled them about. Thus they killed all of them and threw them into the palm trees. Because of the dead bodies of the asses, there was a panoramic scene. It appeared as if clouds of various colors were assembled in the trees. Hearing of this great incident, the demigods from the higher planets showered flowers on Krishna Balaram and beat their drums and offered devotional prayers. A few days after the killing of Dainikasura, people began to come into the Talavana forest to collect the fruits, and animals began to return without fear to feed on the nice grasses growing there. Just by chanting or hearing these transcendental activities and pastimes of the brothers Krishna and Balaram, one could amass pious activities. When Krishna and Balaram entered the village of Vrindavan along with their friends, they played their flutes and the boys praised their uncommon activities in the forest. Their faces were decorated with tilak and smeared with the dust raised by the cows, and Krishna's head was decorated with a peacock feather. Both he and Balaram played their flutes, and the young gopis were joyous to see Krishna returning home. All the gopis in Vrindavan remained very morose on account of Krishna's absence. All day they were thinking of Krishna in the forest or of him herding cows in the pasture. When they saw Krishna returning, all their anxieties were immediately relieved, and they began to look at his face the way drones hover over the honey of the lotus flower. When Krishna entered the village, the young gopis smiled and laughed. Krishna, while playing the flute, enjoyed the beautiful, smiling faces of the gopis. Let's see how much more there is in this chapter. Whoops, there it is. Oh, no, we can finish the chapter. We'll just be a little shorter with... Then Krishna and Balaram were immediately received by their affectionate mothers, Yashoda and Rohini, who, according to the time's demands, began to fulfill the desires of their affectionate sons. Simultaneously, the mothers rendered service and bestowed benediction upon their transcendental sons. They took care of their children by bathing them and dressing them very nicely. Krishna was dressed in yellowish garments, and Balaram was dressed in bluish garments, and they were given all sorts of ornaments and flower garlands. Being relieved of the fatigue of their day's work in the pasturing ground, they looked refreshed and very beautiful. They were given palatable dishes by their mothers, and they pleasantly ate everything. After eating, they were seated nicely on clean bedding, and the mothers began to sing various songs of their activities. As soon as they lay down on the bedding, they very quickly fell fast asleep. In this way, Krishna and Balaram used to enjoy Vrindavan life as coward boys. Sometimes Krishna used to go with his boyfriends and Balaram, and sometimes he used to go alone with his friends to the bank of Yamuna and tend the cows. Gradually, the summer season arrived, and one day, while in the field, the boys and cows became very thirsty and began to drink the water of the Yamuna. The river, however, had been made poisonous by the venom of the great serpent known as Kaliya. Because the water was so poisonous, the boys and cows became visibly affected immediately after drinking. They suddenly fell down on the ground, apparently dead. Then Krishna, who is the life of all that lives, simply cast his merciful glance over them, and all the boys and calves regained consciousness and began to look at one another with great astonishment. they could understand that by drinking the water of the Yamuna they had died, and that the merciful glance of Krishna restored their lives. Thus they appreciated the mystic power of Krishna, who is known as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic yogis. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport for the 15th chapter of Krishna, the killing of Dainakasura. So we did last part of 14, beginning of 15, and we can have a few minutes for questions too. Tomorrow we'll start with the Kaliya story. All right. Now you only have a few minutes for questions, so you could raise your hand, or you can unmute yourself. Okay, Gaurahari, you have a question.
Please accept my obeisances, so glorious to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
The other day you spoke about how Srila Prabhupada in Times Square used to sit under a tree.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something about Prabhupada's, the name of the tree now is Prabhupada's tree, right? Is that correct?
Right, right. That's in a place called Tompkins Square Park in New York, right?
Yes. And my question is, because I heard on your lecture today something about stepping on the grass and how fortunate this grass is because Lord Krishna stepped on them. I wonder how fortunate this tree is in Times Square.
Right? The tree is extremely fortunate because the tree heard the holy names and all the grass around the tree, they had Prabhupada stuff on them.
Is it a really special tree? Maybe some sort of associate Srila Prabhupada?
Now it is.
Maybe?
No. Now it is by Prabhupada's
question. Now it is? Okay, I see. Okay, that's...
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I wanted to touch it, because I generally try to remember things that are associated with God on the things that I see, you know? So that's sort of like an effort I'm putting on my everyday spiritual life, you know? I know it's kind of difficult, but I try.
You know, that's yes. Why I ask. It's called the Prabhupada tree. And actually, I am going to show you a picture of it right now with Prabhupada.
Please.
Yes. Well, you're going to get the mercy of seeing the tree with Prabhupada underneath. Hold on a second. I'm going to share this with you. Here we go. Give me one second. Here we go. And that's Prabhupada under the Prabhupada tree in Tompkins Square Park. Can everybody see that? I guess so.
I can see it. Yeah, I can see it. I even took a screenshot because I want to find out what kind of tree is this.
I don't know what kind of tree it is, but it's a beautiful tree, whatever type of tree it is.
Yeah.
That's Prabhupada under the tree chanting, and so many people joining the Krishna consciousness movement because Prabhupada was under the tree. Pretty cool. All right. So, who else has a question?
Gurudev, please accept my humble obeisances.
Okay. So, what's up, Rakesh?
Nanda Maharaj brothers, his name is Upananda.
Upananda.
They advised Nanda Maharaj to move to Vrindavan. So from where did they move to Vrindavan? I thought they are from Vrindavan.
From Gokul. Vrindavan is the name of the forest. There's 12 main forests in Braj. Sometimes the word, I explained this many times before, sometimes the word Vrindavan refers to the whole area of Mathura Mandal. But in this particular case, Vrindavan refers to Brinda's forest, which is one of the 12 forests. There's other forests like Mahavana and like that. So Krishna appeared in Gokul, which is not in the Vrindavan forest. Gokul is on the other side of the Yamuna, the eastern side of the Yamuna. So the residents of Vrindavan had to cross the Yamuna to go to the Vrindavan, the forest of Vrinda. And the forest of Vrinda is the biggest forest in Vrindavan, the biggest forest in Mathura Mandal. And the forest of Vrindavan encompasses Nandagon, Barshana, and also Govardhan Hill, and also the city of Vrindavan. So that explains. I explained that the other day in the class. And they moved to get rid of the demon, to get away from the demons, but when they moved, they actually discovered demons on the other side of the Yamuna too. So there's no escaping the demons. But anyway, that was their pastime. They started Krishna's pastimes in Gokul, and then moved to the Vrindavan forest after that. I hope everybody understands. Pretty easy to understand. But you know, like I said before, the word Vrindavan can refer to the whole area, or it can refer to one of the 12 forests, which is the largest forest in the area. So, if no one else has a question, we can... Let's see. All right. If no one else has a question, then we can end for the evening, and we'll see everybody.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
Please have my obeisances. I was wondering, with the loyalty to like body and family and all that, I feel like in Krishna consciousness, I've felt that we do place a lot of loyalty on devotees, and like that's seems like a religious association.
Yes.
To, you know, so I don't know how we're different from that in that respect.
No, we have loyalty, we have duty, D-U-T-Y. There's loyalty and then there's attachment. So actually we're attached and we're compassionate to everybody regardless of whether they're devotees or not devotees. But at the same time, we have certain responsibilities towards certain individuals. Just like if someone is married, or if someone is the son or the daughter, there's specific Vedic responsibilities. But ultimately, the attachment should be to serving Krishna. And actually, we should be attached to devotees, but it's not a religious sectarian designation. It's based upon someone's devotion to God. So just like Srila Prabhupada, he visited some monasteries where people were actually very sincere in worshiping God. And Prabhupada appreciated them very much and felt a great affinity, and I would even say an attachment and connection with these people. So it is not a sectarian thing based upon the body or based upon one's particular religion, but it is based upon one's internal consciousness in relationship to God.
When the texts say offer respects to devotees and that Krishna favors his devotees even though he is equal to everyone, is that including like people of other faiths that are sincere?
Yes. If they are actually devoted.
Right.
You know, the whole point is devoted. You know, sometimes people will be members of the Krishna conscious movement, they won't be devoted.
Mm-hmm.
What does devoted mean? Devoted means one wants to please the Supreme Personality of God. Of course, it's not an all or nothing thing, but we can see members of other religions, or we're not even a religion, I mean, members of other organizations, let's use the word, I mean, for lack of a better word, that are more, sometimes more devoted than the majority of people who are members of ISKCON. So it's really a non-denominational thing. You know, we have to see what is the extent of the devotion. Not simply a card-carrying, you know, dhoti-wearing, sari-wearing, sika-wearing member of ISKCON. All right?
Okay, thank you.
What's the difference between culture and religion? Culture, it's just like basically what you grow up with. A religion may have a specific culture, there may be a specific culture. Culture means norms of behavior, basically. You know, like, how do you shake your hands, or you go, Hare Krishna, it's part of our culture. Or whether you respect your elders, or whether you don't respect your elders. I mean, that's culture. Right, so you can have people who are extremely cultured. Where this camera seems to be? Oh, there we go. Who are extremely cultured, but are not religious. But if you have people who are religious, I mean, in a real sense, religion connected to God, then they necessarily have a culture. So cultured people may not be religious, but very religious people are cultured. Anyway, hope that makes sense. Anyway, so on that happy note, let's end. Hopefully we'll see everybody same time, same station tomorrow. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki.